Let me just mention Wednesday nights this week. I know Joy and Sarah are not cooking this week. I think I'm just going to do something simple like pizza, Marco's Pizza this week. So if you're coming Wednesday night and you want to eat, make sure you sign up. So and speaking of Wednesday nights, so we have this Wednesday. We are not meeting next Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. So we are not meeting that Wednesday. The 29th, the last Wednesday of this month, and the first Sunday in Wednesday in December, the 6th. It's my mom's birthday that day. That will be our last Wednesday. But all the sign-up sheets are out there, so if you want to come and eat with us, make sure you sign up. So we'll have a good idea of who all is coming. Man, what a good day here at Stony Brook so far. We prayed over and dedicated these shoe boxes. Man, again, 146 shoe boxes. Man, that's great. That's awesome. And some of you were here during our Sunday school time when Jennifer Parker presented Africa Hope Initiatives with us this morning. What happened to the rest of your family? Oh, bless. Okay. Okay, well, yeah, we'll definitely remember her son, Abram. He's back there. Her husband, Matt, is with Abram. Addison, her daughter, is with her right here. But what a moment. What a good time this morning in Sunday school. And they also have the table out here in the lobby where are the bishops still here? Okay, so Wes and Tammy Bishop are here manning that table. But Africa Hope Initiatives, along with Operation Christmas Child and every single mission, they need our prayers every single day. My nephew is with us this morning. So Camden gets to hear his Uncle Lance preach this morning. So he's sleeping. Oh, it's okay. I'll give him a hard time about it later. But it's good to have my nephew. Man, that's so cool to say. Here with us this morning. But hey, welcome. Hope everybody's had a good week so far. Daryl and Steve are back from their hunting trip. So how many birds did you get? Not enough. Man, all the way out to South Dakota and came back with not enough birds. You got to go back. Oh, man. All right. But it's good to have those guys back with us again. It's a good time. So, yeah, we're in this gratitude series. If you want to, go ahead and turn to Exodus chapter 14, specifically verse 10, I believe. Yeah, that's right. Verse 10. So Exodus 14 and verse 10, that's where we'll be a little bit later. So if you want to go ahead and flip to that, we're going to stay in Exodus for the primary time of the sermon today. I think it's Exodus 14 and Exodus 16 that we're going to be in. So if you want to kind of thumb those two chapters there, that'll be great. But as you're doing that, there was a movie series from the 1990s about two men. From the 1990s, so that's like 30 years ago, okay? About two men, and it was just two films, and they still call it a series. I guess that's okay, since there's two of them. But they still call it a series. But this morning, I'm going to give you some descriptive words. And your job is to see if you can guess what these movies are, okay? Just from these descriptive words. So, are you ready? Okay, these words are complaining, negativity, good words, right? Intolerance, uncompromising, griping, fussing, and grumpiness. Oh, man, you guys didn't even ask, like, y'all didn't wait for me to ask you what they were. But yeah, it's grumpy old men. And grumpier old men. Who has watched these movies before? All right, so who's watched at least the original, the first one, Grumpy Old Men? Man, every time I see Walter Matthau, I think of Mr. Wilson from the Dennis the Menace movie. So I remember when he had like the chiclet teeth. Anyway, well, that's a whole nother movie. But man, magnetic personalities, right, that these guys presented in these movies. But, you know, like we said, you remember these movies from the 1990s. These movies starred late actors Walter Matthau. His name in the movie was Max Goldman, and also Jack Lemmon, whose name in the movie was John Gustafson. And the movies were received because, as Hollywood does well, they allowed the audience, those that would watch these movies, to witness the main characters get away with exaggerated attitudes and behaviors on the premise of just being grumpy. Good times, right? Anyway, it's funny to watch it. Like, I'm a big fan of Sanford and Son, which is even older. And can we all say that Fred Sanford, Red Fox's character, he was pretty grumpy on that show all the time. I love that one too. But here in talking about these movies, because the characters were able to express their irritation through comedy, the movies, they became fan favorites, audience favorites. However, if we were to do these things or act this way in real life, would it be a fan favorite? No. People would, like, run away from us. They would never want to be in our midst or in our company. Because in reality, no one likes to spend time with a complainer, a grumbler, or in this movie, or in these movies' cases, grumpy old men. Or even this cat. Do you know this cat? The grumpy cat? Evidently, he's really big on YouTube. Man, he's got a mean-looking face. I don't think I would want to pet him, even. Why do I bring all this up today, talking about this cat or talking about the grumpy old men movies? Studies have shown that few things are more detrimental or destructive to our health than a bad attitude. Because our attitudes begin with our mindset. If our perspective is stuck in the muck of negativity, then our body, our behaviors, our mental, emotional, and even physical health will begin to take on this posture, which is a posture of negativity. So, again, what series are we in this month? Gratitude, that's right. So last week we talked about fundamental gratitude. Say that, fundamental gratitude. And it's about the receiving and the giving of God's grace, his awesome grace that we don't deserve, but he gives it. Last week's title and everything we talked about last week, it sounds a whole lot more awesome and peachy. And yes, I said peachy and all those kind of words, more so than talking about a bunch of grumpy old men or grumpiness altogether. Am I right? Yeah. So that's that. In a world filled with challenges and stressors, how many of you guys can like name 5 to 10 things that are stressing you out right now? Think about it. I see some heads nodding up and down. In this kind of world, it's easy to let negativity and grumpiness just creep into our lives. But I believe that gratitude can serve as a transformative force in our lives, turning our grumpiness into things like joy and content. So today, I want us to look at, through the big idea this morning, how the incredible power of gratitude can help us overcome the seemingly opposite feeling of grumpiness. So to start off this morning, let's look at the nature of grumpiness. What is it? What is grumpiness? It's a state of mind characterized by irritability, discontent, and a general sense of just being dissatisfied. It's that feeling that we sometimes experience when things don't go our way. When we focus on what's lacking in our lives, or when we let minor inconveniences overshadow the good in our lives that is present. Last week, we looked at the Passover event from Exodus chapter 12. Now, I'm talking about the original Passover, the OG Passover, if you will. I share with you that Moses and his brother Aaron, they tried to get the king of Egypt, a.k.a. the Pharaoh, to let God's people go or be freed out of slavery 9 times. Okay? 9 times didn't work. So they went back a 10th time. Well, let me tell you, the 10th time worked. As we looked at last week, God sent an angel of death to kill the firstborn of every house there in the land of Egypt that didn't have the lamb's blood painted on what? The doorframe, doorpost. So, and let me also ask you a question. Did the Pharaoh's family have the lamb's blood painted on their doorframe? No, they didn't. So this last and the final plague, it affected the Pharaoh and his family to the point where in his grief, he decided to let God's people, the Israelites, go. Pharaoh's firstborn child died, and he decided to free God's people, who had been slaves there in his country for years and years and years and years. As a great crowd of Israelites headed away from Egypt, they ended up right there at the Red Sea. And about this same time, the Pharaoh, someone who we thought we might have been done with, in this event, well, his heart was hardened, and he decided that he wanted his slaves back. He's like, oh, what have I done? He had one of those kind of moments. So he sent his armies out into the desert, out into the wilderness, towards the Red Sea to get his slaves back. You know, I can't imagine once they got close enough, you know, looking out in the distance. They didn't have binoculars back then, but they're on the horizon, and you hear the sound of the chariots and the horses and maybe loud noises from trumpets or whatever kind of instrument the Egyptian army had. But once they got close enough, the panic and the turmoil that God's people, the Israelites, started to feel, seeing their once enemy coming back, coming closer to them. And because of that, they start to utter under their breath, they start to complain, and guess what? They start to grumble. Let's look at Exodus chapter 14, and we're going to be looking at verses 10 through 12. It says, as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, God's people did, was it because there was no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone. Let us serve the Egyptians. It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. So, you know, we see the Israelites grumbling here and complaining because Pharaoh's army is coming. The Egyptian army is coming. But we know what the end result was. I think most of us know what the end result was. God intervened as he always does. God was always with his people. And guess what? Is he still with his people today? Yeah, amen. But when they felt like they couldn't get anywhere because they were trapped by the Red Sea on one side and Pharaoh's army on the other side, God, through Moses' help, particularly Moses' staff, he parted the sea and allowed his people to walk across, get this, dry ground. Can you imagine that? Walking across a big body of water like the Red Sea, across, it wasn't mushy. It was dry ground across the middle of this thing with a seawall on this side and another seawall over here on this side. And the Bible says they walked across on dry ground. You know, it was, who's been to an aquarium in here? All right, so many of us, you know, here in Eastern North Carolina especially, you know, we have the privilege of living not too far away from the ocean, okay? Which our North Carolina beaches have several aquariums to choose from. But, you know, I always like going to like the shark tank. It's like a big wall, and you see the sharks swimming up in there, okay? Can you imagine being here, being an Israelite, walking through that dry ground and looking to the left and looking to the right and see the big and small sea life that you see as you're walking across? Man, what a sight that must have been. But after such distractions of a cloud or maybe a fog by day and a fire by night, the Pharaoh's army, the Egyptian army, finally reached the Red Sea with the parted sea walls. And they started to go right across on that dry ground, just as the Israelites were, to get their hands on God's people. But once God's people made it safely to the other side, God told Moses once again to use his staff. And the sea walls crashed down back to their rightful place. And the Pharaoh's army got swallowed up by the raging waters of the Red Sea. God intervened as he helped his people in that particular situation. But before that, we saw the inconveniences of Pharaoh's army coming and the Red Sea overshadowing the fact that God's people were free. Those things, those inconveniences overshadowed the good reality that was present, which was the freedom of the Israelites. Also, when it comes to grumpiness, it can cause us to see the world through a lens of negativity. And it can create a cycle of just being unhappy, like, all the time. Parents, I got a question for you this morning. A lot of you, your children are older, or adults even. And this might help, especially if your kids were growing up prior to 2007, because that's when the first iPhone came out, 2007. But can you tell me, what is the longest road trip you ever went on with your kids? Does anybody have an example this morning? Chicago to Orlando. Lisa, how long is that? 15 hours, give or take. Okay. Anybody else? Can anybody beat 15 hours on the road? Alaska from North Carolina? Oh my goodness, how long was that trip? Wow. All right. Well, so how are these trips though? You know, way before social media, way before tablets, way before phones. How are those trips? Are you getting PTSD right now? Sure. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. So, Ms. Harris, was it miserable? Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad it was a good trip. But can you imagine a trip that lasted 45 days? 45 days or so. It's like a full month. Plus 15 days added on to it in the second month. So these Israelites, you know, once they got across the Red Sea, the Bible tells us that 45 days had passed since they were enslaved in Egypt. And guess what? 45 days, these Israelites, they start complaining again. let's look at what they were complaining about and grumbling about this time. So Exodus chapter 16, I told you we were going to also be there this morning. And let's look at the first three verses there, Exodus 16, 1 through 3. The whole Israelite community set out from Elam and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." Who wants to hang around these people? Oh my goodness. But you know, just as we struggle with the gravity of our physical needs, so did God's people. So did the Israelites. Overcome by their fear of hunger, their focus shifted from the Lord's provision to what another could provide. You think with all that they had been through, they would remember what God had done for them. But their minds went from God back to Egypt, where they were treated terribly. But overcome, you know, by that fear of hunger. It's funny how our brain works sometimes. You go back to something that treated you bad or treated you terrible, because you got the nourishment and stuff that you needed under that. It's like, what has God just done for you? I mean, one of the greatest miracles ever, in my opinion, was crossing the Red Sea. They had just done that. But they're complaining to Moses and also Aaron. It's like, hey, we want to go back because you can't feed us well enough. That's what they were saying. Their complaint against, or their complaint surpassed their empty bellies to a resolve that Egypt could better care for them than God could in that time of need. I think this is definitely a shake my head kind of moment. But let's continue on and read what verses 4 through 8 say in Exodus 16. It says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days.' So Moses and Aaron they said to all the Israelites, 'In the evening, you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt. And in the morning, you will see the glory of God, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us?' Moses also said, 'You will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want to eat in the morning, because he has heard your grumbling against him.' Moses says again, 'Who are we? You are not grumbling against us, but against the Lord.' So God, being gentle with his spiritual infants here, he heard their grumble and graciously provided for his children by sending them meat from the sky in the evening and birthing manna for them in the morning time. However, Moses takes this moment as a teaching opportunity and addresses their toxic attitudes that they had or have. Their views were through lenses of negativity and also through the lenses of unhappiness. In essence to all this, Moses warned Israel, saying, 'Hey, this attitude that you have right here,'" I doubt he really taught like that, But this attitude that you have right here, this complaint against yourselves, this underlying murmuring that you have, is not against us. It's not against my brother Aaron and myself. Your words, your complaints, your grumbles, all those kind of things, they are against God. He asked them, is this really who we are? He had to come to Jesus' meeting with these people before Jesus was born in Bethlehem. You get it? Okay. Are we a people that would grumble against the Lord's provisions? That's what he was asking them. Moses understood what the people did not yet understand, that we, you and I, we become what we behold. If we behold anger, guess what? You're going to become angry. If we behold envy, we become beholden to jealousy. If we harbor frustration, we transform into a quarrelsome person whose arguments keep us from getting along with other people. Moses knew that if the people beheld grumbling, they would become a people far away from the heart of the Lord. The early church leader, James, he understood this as well. And he spoke of this in his letter there to the early church. When he surveyed his congregation, he found his body of believers, that they were adopting different postures of sin. James urged them, just as Moses did with the Israelites, to guard themselves. James told his fellow Christ followers, and many of them were, you know, early Christians, infants in the faith, if you will, that even in the most significant trials, to remain strong with the attitude of Christ, with the attitude of Jesus. And we can read about that in the first four verses of James chapter 1. For if they do not, they will become beholden to the sin that is beckoning them in their lives. So speaking of James, let's look at chapter 1 in his letter, verses 12 through 15. This is what it says there. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and also enticed. Then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. My friends, desires that tempt us to place faith in those desires and away from the Lord. You know, like I said, for the Israelites, that was Egypt. These desires have the potential to lead us away from the Lord's salvation, and also to be directed away from the Lord's grace, or a word that we looked at last week in week one of the series called charis. You remember that word? Charis. It will lead us only into darkness or death if we choose this route. If you put your faith into a desire and not of the Lord, man, that's something. It will only lead you into darkness and maybe eventually death. But my friends, that's where gratitude comes in. That's where gratitude comes in. So number two this morning, let's look at the transformative power of gratitude. Transformative power of gratitude. Gratitude is the antidote to grumpiness. It's the antidote to grumpiness. It really is. As we learned last week, hopefully, gratitude is the practice of recognizing and appreciating the positive, say positive, aspects of our lives, even in the midst of challenges when they arise. When we bring in gratitude, when we cultivate it, we shift our gaze, our focus, if you will, from what's wrong to what's right, and from what's missing to what we already have. Gratitude is the attitude of acknowledging our blessings. Well, whenever, you know, if they're big blessings or small blessings, and just savoring the joy that each one of those blessings brings into our lives. Let me ask you this morning, are you going to make the choice for gratitude? Are you going to make the choice? I'm hoping you will, that you make a choice for gratitude, because gratitude is a choice. It's a choice that we make almost every single day. We can choose to dwell on our frustrations and our grievances, you know, things like that. Or we can choose to focus on the countless reasons that you and I have to be thankful. Maybe you're indecisive. And maybe just a little side note here, but when Aaron and I think of what we want to eat, man, how many of you struggle? You're indecisive when it comes to what you want to eat. I see some pointing and stuff. But maybe you're indecisive about whether or not you should be dwelling on your frustrations and the grievances and things going on in your life, or you're indecisive about, you know, just focusing on the good and the blessings that are in your life. Which one do you take more time throughout the week or throughout the day thinking about? The bad stuff or the good and the blessings that you have to be thankful for? Think about that. Let me really challenge you to choose gratitude. Choose the good and the blessings that are in your life. You know, my friends, the choice of gratitude, it's a powerful tool. It's a powerful tool to have. It will enable you to rise above the grumpiness that you might have in your life. So I just mentioned this to you, but you have countless reasons to be thankful. Each and every single one of us does. You know, a few weeks ago, I mentioned an old hymn, and it was called Count Your Blessings. What's the rest of it? Name the one by one. Man, that's hard. And I said that in that sermon too, to think of every single thing that God has blessed you with and to count them one by one by one. But anyway, think of those things that you are thankful for and count your blessings. That's one of the simplest yet most effective ways to combat grumpiness. Take a moment each day and every day to reflect on the things that you are most thankful for. You know, it's a popular time of the year to do that right now. All right? Whether it's the love of your family, whether it's the beauty of God's creation and nature, whether it's the support of a friend that you have, or that college basketball season is back. Oh, man, I love it. Even though my team lost on Friday night, man, college basketball season is back. How many college basketball fans we have in here? Oh, man, I love college ball. So what? My dad's a fan of college football, basketball, that kind of stuff. Okay, cool. Thanks, Abby. but let me challenge you. Let me challenge you to do this, especially every day between now, which is November 12th, and Thanksgiving, November 23rd. That's 11 days. 11 days. I want you to stop and take a moment each day. Maybe set an alarm on your phone. Maybe put a reminder on your phone to every day stop and reflect on something out of your day or out of your life that you are thankful for. Okay? Let me really challenge you. You got 11 days between now and Thanksgiving to do that. But the act of counting your blessings can shift your perspective and also improve your mood. All right? Looking at one more thing regarding the transformative power of gratitude is it's got a ripple effect. It's the ripple effect of gratitude. You know, what is a ripple effect? Have you ever been to like a smooth body of water and thrown a stone out there? What happens when once it hits the water? Yeah, you see the ripples start, okay? And they keep going and going and going away from that impact point or that zone there. That's the same with gratitude. It has the same effect in our lives every single day. When we are grateful, we radiate positivity, and it affects those that are around us. You know, a lot of you know my mom, Brenda Pippen. I've heard for more than one person everywhere I go that every time they meet my mom, they're like, your mom smiles all the time. So, like, in the good times and also the bad times, my mom always has a smile on her face. But I don't know about you, but mom, through her smile in the good and the bad, it radiates positivity, okay? If you can be a mom or a Brenda, it can mend broken relationships. It can smooth bonds that you have, or strengthen bonds, I should say, and create a more harmonious and a loving community. Man, community, a loving community. Wouldn't that be great in this day and age? A loving community. Hey, I hope that's what you want. It's what you should want. And I know God definitely wants it for all of us. He really does. You know, looking at our final point this morning, how can we take the two things that we've been talking about, two things at extreme opposite ends of each other, and use one of them to outdo the other? Let's look at it. It's overcoming grumpiness with gratitude. So how can we do this? How can we overcome grumpiness with gratitude in our daily lives? You know, one way is to practice mindfulness. Let's practice mindfulness. Be mindful of your thoughts and also your emotions. How many of you just blurt out things? You don't really think before you speak. You just blurt out. Yeah, some people do. Some people do. You speak before you think. If you feel, or if you notice grumpiness just creeping into your life, let me challenge you to pause and redirect your thoughts to the things that you're thankful for, okay? If you feel that sense that you're going to grumble about something or complain about something, hopefully your mind switches off and goes to something that you are most thankful for instead of complaining. So use that challenge. Or that technique, you know, talking about count your blessings that we talked about just a little bit ago between now and Thanksgiving. And doing this can break your cycle of negativity. You can also keep a gratitude journal. How many of you guys have heard about keeping a gratitude journal? Yeah, that's a popular thing. But consider doing this. This will be an easy way to keep up with your blessings. That way, you know, you can start counting them one by one. You would simply jot down daily expressions of thankfulness about how the Lord has blessed you and given you these things. You can just write them down in a journal. This practice can help you become more aware of the good in your life, and it can serve as a reminder when grumpiness peeps its ugly head and threatens to take over. One more thing that you can do when it comes to overcoming grumpiness with gratitude. You can share your gratitude. Share your gratitude with others. You know, I mentioned my mom, Brenda, earlier. Be a Brenda, like I said. Expressing your appreciation to those around you by wearing a smile on your face or by doing something else. You know, if you do one of these things, it can create a positive atmosphere and strengthen your relationships with others, with those around you. If you wear a smile on your face, or if you do something else that lifts up your fellow man. Let me encourage y'all to do this daily. So as we close this morning, ask yourself a couple questions. How can you move the needle forward in your lives this week? Does it include a gratitude practice? Maybe one of the practices that we've looked at this morning through the gratitude journal, or maybe setting an alarm on your phone to think about, you know, as soon as that thing goes off, think about something that you want to thank God for in your life. Second question, if you feel stuck, maybe it's because you need to release something to the Lord. Do you grumble in your spirit Have you taken on a posture of ingratitude? How can you replace this mindset of ingratitude with gratitude? Grumpiness and gratitude are the extreme opposites of the spectrum. I've said that already today. Hopefully you've seen or heard in the sermon today that grumpiness is indeed the nemesis of gratitude. But let me remind you that the power of gratitude is undeniable in transforming our lives. When we choose gratitude over grumpiness today and every single day in our lives, we choose happiness. We choose contentment and a bigger outlook on a brighter outlook on our lives when we choose gratitude. As we move forward, let's make a conscious effort to cultivate gratitude and banish grumpiness from our hearts. The Apostle Paul reminded the Philippians, and he also reminds us too here in 2023, in Philippians chapter 2, verse 14 through the first part of verse 16, he says, do everything without what? Grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky, as you hold firmly to the word of life. Remember, in every single situation throughout your day, there is something to be thankful for. Let us strive to live our lives with gratitude, spreading love and positivity to every single person that we encounter. Let's pray together. God, we love you. We just thank you so much for this message today. God, I just pray and I really hope that it's going to challenge every single one of us, including myself, to just stop and think about for a moment all the things that you have thanked or blessed us with. And God, we should just be so thankful for that. God, there's a lot of things in our lives that, yeah, we can complain about, that we can grumble about and all that kind of stuff, but everything that you have blessed us with outweighs all that, or it should. So let's just pause throughout our day. Let's keep a journal. Let's set reminders on our phones. Let's just pause and let's just simply give you thanks for the blessings that you have rained down in our lives. Thank you again for this day, for this sermon, for this sermon series. Hopefully it's just reminders of things that we can do to be more grateful, to have a gratitude mindset. God, we just thank you so much, not just here at Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving month, but we're so thankful of you always. Just be with us now, God. We love you. We pray all this in your name. Amen. Hey, hopefully you don't leave the words here in this room. Or if you listen to this message again, don't leave the words there in the audio. Take them. Thank God for what he has blessed you with every single day. You know, I'm grateful for eternal life and for that decision that we can make here on this side of heaven that, hey, I want to put my hope, my trust, and everything into Jesus. I believe him. I believe in what he did for me, for dying on a cross and raising to life on that third day. I think a lot of us in this room have done that. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you want to do that for the first time. Man, we got a baptistry behind us here, and we're ready to baptize people. Or, hey, maybe you've been slipping. Maybe you are that grumpy person, but today's message has just spoke to you. Come down, get some prayer this morning. Let me talk with you. That'll be great. So let's stand, and we're going to sing this one last song.